UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. We are starting off tonight with a voice submission from Paul in Cambridgeshire with a UFO sighting in November last year. Then following Paul, we speak to Stella in Bristol about her childhood experiences and a strange sighting in 2018 of what looked to Stella like a bird on top of a totem pole flying in the sky, and an encounter with the mysterious and elusive Big Cat. Paul up next.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hi Nick, it's Paul here from Cambridgeshire again. I thought I'd share an experience I had in mid-November last year, where I was walking my dog about 2 minutes from my house, and I was walking up the main street when, not too high above the houses, I saw lights and then these craft. I thought they were aeroplanes at first, but they looked too small to be aeroplanes, but they looked too big to be drones. But I think they probably were drones. And there were 6 of them in a almost perfect circle moving clockwise, just circling, which I found very strange. I've never seen that many craft in the skies above the houses before. I walk every night, my dog, and I'd never seen that many in that, certainly not in that sort of circle shape, but not that many altogether in one place. They were lit quite brightly by white and red light. So we'll call them drones, the drones themselves had a fixed wing going across the body, so there was a wing on each side of it. And across that wing were the red lights, and they were quite bright. They weren't flashing, just red lights. And then from the end of the wings down to the back of the plane, I think probably on cables or something, because I couldn't see what they were attached to, there was the white lights, and they again weren't flashing. They were just white lights on. So they formed a V going down from the wings, and the red lights formed a line going across, making a triangle. As I say, they were quite bright. They caught my eye, and they were moving, as I say, in a circle. They were equal distance apart from each other, and they were equal distance across from each other. And I sort of was quite mesmerised by this and was watching it and thinking, this looks quite bizarre. And then I noticed in the centre of this circle was another craft, and this craft was triangle. It was very black. It wasn't as bright as the others. I'm not quite sure why that was, because it seemed to be at the same height. It had 3 lights on it, which were on the triangle, the tips of the triangle, were not down to a sharp point. They were sort of rounded off a bit, but those lights were moving on this craft. They were rotating, but the craft itself didn't seem to be moving. It was not quite sure how it did it, but it was, again, that was even more bizarre. So I'm watching this, as I say, it's just not far, maybe 500 feet above the houses. It's very clear, and I got this, you know, quite sort of, when I saw this triangle, what I would say is a classic UFO shape, I got a little bit nervous. I sort of looked, I was out in the open on the pathway. Now, there's, as you walk up this street, there's houses on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side across the road is a sort of wooded area that then goes into a children's park and sort of play area. And then there's houses beyond that side. And I suddenly felt the need that I should maybe get under those trees, because I thought that they were going to, something was going to happen between these craft, because clearly the craft in the middle was being encircled by these drones, and I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. So all this probably lasted a minute or so while I'm watching all this happen, and then I looked, having got this sort of bad feeling about what was going to happen and thinking that I should move, I then watched as the triangle craft then just disappeared. It didn't move, it didn't fly off in any direction, it just vanished. It just, I assume, cloaked itself and disappeared. The six craft carried on circling for probably 15-20 seconds, and then they all broke off into different directions and obviously just started scattering around the skies, and obviously looked to me like they were looking for this other craft that had gone. So I thought, right, OK, that's bizarre. I carried on my dog walk, and as you get to the top of this road, you can then turn left, and the sky becomes much more of an expanse. You can see more of the sky from the top of there because it's much more open. To my amazement, again, there was even more of these drones. There must have been, I would say, 12, 15 drones in the sky, all flying around. I could see them right across the sky, and they were clearly looking for this other craft that had disappeared. So I continued my walk right the way back. It was probably, I don't know, 30-minute walk by the time I got home. And when I got back to the house, I could still see these crafts in the distance, still flying around, still obviously looking for what was going on, or where this other craft had gone. And I left it at that. I left them in the sky, and I went in. But that wasn't the end of it. Then the next day, I was on my local Facebook page where they post, you know, anything about the village or whatever. And someone had posted as well that they'd seen all this activity in the sky. They hadn't mentioned the triangle or the whether they were drones. They just, somebody had gone out, I think, to smoke in their garden, from what I can remember, and had noticed all these lights in the sky moving around and what the hell's going on, sort of thing. And they posed this question, what the hell's going on in the skies tonight? There's loads of craft all flying around. And then there was a number of people who had posted that they'd seen them, and that commented that they were either military or police drones, which is quite possible because they weren't normal drones. They're definitely bigger than anything I've seen. And that was sort of the chatter. So I then sort of made some notes on this and thought, right, you know, obviously I want to share this on your podcast. So I went back to find this, to get some screenshots and find this chat that was on there, and it's gone from Facebook, from the page. It's not anywhere. I couldn't find it, and couldn't get any of the moderators who look after that page to find it either. So I'm not quite sure what happened to that, but it was definitely there that first night, that first morning after the morning, straight after it, but it was gone after that. So I'm not quite sure what happened with that. Yeah, that's really the most bizarre experience I've had for a long time. As you know, I've been on your show and talked about my other experiences from when I was younger, but that happened, as I say, in November, so it's been pretty quiet since then. But if there's anything else, I'll share it with you. Keep up the great work on the podcast, and thanks for your time.
Hello, Stella. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. Very nice to be here.
It is great to have you on today, and you're calling from Bristol in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I am. Gateway to the West.
Beautiful part of the world and close to where I'm from. That's great, Stella. Now, you have some experiences to share. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Yeah, I like a lot of your guests, I had a lot of experiences in early childhood, which I never explained to myself. I just thought every child has these things. So I never really talked about them with anybody. But as a caveat to that, I would say that my mother encouraged me in a belief in the paranormal. She, for example, she brought me up with books like the Flower Fairies book and Arthur Rackham Illustrations of Fairies. It was very, and if we went out for a family walk, they would she would point out things like little holes in the trees and say, oh, that's a fairy house, you know. And she was also an artist, and her artwork was pretty magical scenery. So there was something going on there, but I never talked about that with her in depth. But she certainly encouraged me in the belief, or let me put it another way, she didn't trample on any of my notions or beliefs, which was really good. And yeah, so, and then when I got to be older, the older teenager, she shared with me all her books, which were lots of fantasy and science fiction. They bought The Lord of the Rings for me as an eight-year-old birthday present, for example. And we also watched a lot of fantasy television, like Doctor Who and Star Trek, which most people growing up in the 60s and 70s did. So you could say that I was primed for a belief in some of this stuff. I took a keen interest in all of it when I got to my early teenage years. Leylines, everything, was really interested in it. But I'd never thought to myself that I'd seen anything unusual. And it was only when I had my UFO experience, which was 2018, that I started thinking back to all these childhood experiences, and I realised, well, yeah, I did have some really weird stuff going on, but never put it into words that it was UFOs or anything. So I'm just going to read a short list of the sort of things I experienced. Visual and oral hallucinations, especially on going to sleep or just going to sleep or just waking up, and also during childhood illnesses when I was kept at home off school, when I was sort of woozy from being ill, that sort of feeling. So a half hypnotic state, if you like. So I had feelings, quite frightening feelings of falling in dreams, hallucinations of falling with strange voices calling out to me, which was really quite frightening, like a nightmare. I had a lot of changes in my perception, so that in these periods, these half hypnotic periods, also when I was wide awake and doing things like cycling to school, so when my body was under stress, I would have feelings of being outside myself and watching myself from outside, either up above above my shoulder, or up in the corner of a room looking down at me on my bed. I had that a lot. The changes in perception were things like seeing things very, very far away, as if through a telescope, and then zooming in very close. So if somebody was near me, I would zoom in with my eyes as if it like a microscope and get closer and closer and see millions of like wrinkles as if they were really old people, you know, and very strange things. Also, which I think is quite common for children, is waking up and feeling that I wasn't in my own room, that I was in a different room, maybe a different time. So these were all the kind of what I would call hallucinations that I had as a child. And I quite enjoyed these things, actually. They were part of my imagination, which was very lively anyway. They were quite enjoyable. Oh, this is unusual, you know, this is quite fun. But the main hallucination, I'm saying hallucination, Nick, which might offend some of your listeners, but I'm not really sure. Or vision might be another word. Another thing I saw when I was around about 9 or 10 years old, my mother had a very narrow, dark back garden, which was full of trees and things she'd planted herself. So apple trees, rowan trees. It was very thick with vegetation. As a small child, you could almost get lost in it, even though it wasn't very big, you know. And I'd go out into the garden at night, especially when there was a moon, and I'd stand there for many minutes looking up at the sky, and the only light behind me would be the kitchen window, because the streetlights didn't reach over into this garden. So it was really nice and dark. And I'd look up at the sky and I'd see these things, which I can only describe as shoals of silver fish. Just like, you know, you look up at the sky and your eyes have to adjust, and you gradually see more and more stars in the night sky, if you're nowhere near a street lamp. And I'd start to see these things moving around, not ultra fast, about the same speed as a satellite going over, but this was in the late 60s, so there weren't that many satellites. But they didn't travel in a straight line right across the sky. They kind of zigzagged backwards and forwards between the stars. Sometimes there was single ones, sometimes they were in pairs. Sometimes they were in small groups, and sometimes they were in quite large, like I said, like a shoal of silver fish. And they would go towards the moon and then away from the moon and backwards and forwards. So, and I'm sure a lot of people hearing this can think of all kinds of explanations for this. Again, maybe being in a mild hypnotic self-induced state, I thought maybe I was pinching the nerve on the back of my neck, which can make you feel a bit dizzy. And I'm sure people will say, well, there could be natural explanations for this. Maybe it was birds high up in the sky catching light somehow. But to me, they didn't seem like anything I'd ever seen before. And I was absolutely mesmerized by this. And I used to shout out to my mum, come and see what I can see. Come out into the garden. And she wouldn't. She was always busy, you know. So she either ignored me or I'm imagining that I was calling out to her. So those were the weird things I saw when I was a child. And my audio and visual hallucinations went on up until my early teenage years. They tapered off when I went to school because the stress of being at school got more and more and probably drove these things out of my brain. Audio hallucinations I had, they were tended to be typical. Again, I don't want to offend anybody, but typical schizo hallucinations where you hear voices abusing you or calling your name, but not in a nice way, in a nasty way, that sort of thing, you know. So that was what I experienced as a child. And then I didn't have too many in the next 3 decades, really, because work and adult life and all the stress of adult life got in the way. I'm also going to mention that at the age of 16, I was sectioned into a psychiatric hospital and told that I was diagnosed with personality disorder. And I was there for 6 months and I was incredibly happy in there. It was wonderful. It was like freedom for a child that age, you know, no school, loads of new friends, beautiful landscape gardens, all that sort of thing. And I was told in there, not by doctors, but by nurses on the ward, that I had these oral and visual hallucinations because my brain, I was under massive stress. You know, I come from a fairly dysfunctional, abusive family. And that was the explanation I was given. And I accepted that explanation. Yeah, you know, they said, oh, your brain's heated up with all the stress and this is what happens. And as you recover and calm down, you won't have these things. And that was more or less true. They tapered off as I went into being a young adult. So I only started having these experiences again in the late 2000s, 2010s. So that was in 2018. It was, I've got this written down in great detail. It was in broad daylight. It was an early Sunday evening, around about 5 o'clock in the autumn, I think about August 2018. And the reason I have to say I think is because I destroyed all my records of this that had the date stamp on it because I was so embarrassed and confused and freaked out by this. And I tried very hard to find out if anybody else had seen it. I even wrote to the police and asked them if there were weird drones in the area or anything like that. And they got as far as sending me a form that you could fill out the details for them. And at that stage, I just abandoned it. I thought, this is crazy. And I'm going to be so embarrassed by all this if it got out anywhere. And also at the time, Nick, I did try to contact a couple of UFO websites, but didn't get any replies back from them. So, yeah, I abandoned it. So this sighting took place on Clifton Downs, which is a big open space in Bristol, which a lot of people might know. You can walk right over it and have a good look of the Avon Gorge and the Bristol Suspension Bridge. That would sort of orient people to where it is. And I called my sighting the Clifton Drone because I didn't know what else to call it. And like I say, I asked my friends, I asked people who were, even one of my friends is actually on the local city council, an elected official. I asked her if she had heard anything about it. Nobody had seen anything about it. It wasn't in the press. It wasn't in the media. So I'd been for a walk across the Downs because my arthritis wasn't too good at that time. And I tried to walk a couple of miles and then a couple of miles back for my health. And I was walking back across. I have sent you illustrations showing the the positioning of this thing and what it looked like. Everybody around me, there was a lot of people on the downs, mostly going home because it was a Sunday evening. So they were all heading off the downs. Not a single person was looking at the sky. Every single person was looking at their phones. Obviously, there were cars, quite a lot of people around, but nobody looking up. And as I was walking back towards the main road, I looked across to my left, and above the tree line, I saw what I thought at first was a hawk hanging in the air. And I instantly thought to myself, that can't be a hawk. At this distance, a small hawk, I probably wouldn't even see. Also, I know for a fact that I see loads of birds when I'm out on country walks. They don't hang. They have to flutter to stay in one place. They don't actually hang there, not moving at all. It wasn't moving in the wind. There was a gentle, a brisk breeze coming from my right towards this thing, and it wasn't moving. So a bird, even if it was trying to hover, it would move around with the wind, you know. I thought, and I kind of half thought it was a bird, and I was walking towards it, and it seemed to keep pace with me. As I approached the road, it seemed to come more and more overhead, so that I ended up looking straight up at it. And at that time, I was able to really assess what it was I was seeing. And it seemed to be about maybe 200 or 300 feet up in the air. It was above a nearby office block, which was pretty tall. So that's what I was basing it on. It was above that height. I kept walking towards it, staring up at the sky. And what really confused me was nobody else around me was looking up at the sky at this thing. Nobody sort of came by me and said, "What on earth are you looking at?" Because I must have looked really strange walking along, just constantly looking up at this thing. And then I was quite near the road, so quite near a busy road with traffic. And I looked up straight up, and it was almost as if it was right above me. And I'll tell you what it looked like the most. It looked like those wooden birds that you see on Indian totem poles with the wings straight out to the side. So in all this time, it had never moved against the wind. It had kind of kept pace with me and then come overhead, but it hadn't. The wind wasn't touching it. It wasn't drifting. It wasn't doing anything like that. So that was already weird enough. But then the weirdest thing was that as I carried on looking up at it and my eyes adjusted to it, coming down from it, like as if they were dangling down on two wires, were two little blinking blue lights, like little LED lights. And at that point, I thought, this thing is aware of me and there's something about it, it's actually looking at me or it's aware of me. And not that I snapped out of it, I knew it was still there, but I thought, if I carry on walking home, my normal walk home from here, when I get to the other side of that office building, I might have a different view of it. So that's what I did. I walked across the road, I started going down a hill, and then I turned around and looked again. And it still hadn't drifted much with the wind. I mean, it had started to move southwest, but against the wind, as it was going across the wind rather than with the wind. And here's another weird part of this sighting. As I was seeing it from a different angle, instead of looking like a bird as if you were seeing it from underneath, it was now becoming a more classic V shape that you might see a gull with its wings up flying in the air. And it was more silhouetted and further away. And as I stood there, and again, it was a busy road, there were cars going by, an elderly couple who were walking up the road stopped and said, "Oh, are you looking at it too?" And we stood there and had a conversation about it, which was one of the strangest conversations I've ever had in my life. Because they said to me, "Oh, we've just come from the Cambridge pub." Now, the Cambridge pub was literally 200 yards away uphill around the corner, which I knew that pub. And they said, "There's a whole crowd of people watching it. Somebody's even getting binoculars to see if they can study it further, you know." So we stood together and watched this thing, and we had a discussion of what we thought it could possibly be. And our ideas about it were mad. When I look back on it, this was a mad conversation. We were saying things like, "Oh, maybe it's something the university have sent up to test weather conditions," or "Could it be tethered to that building by a long invisible wire?" And it was crazy because the tether, if there was a tether, would have had to be about a quarter of a mile long for the way this thing had started moving southward. And we just watched it in complete bemusement. In the end, they gave up. We said, "Oh, well, wonder if it will be on the news," sort of thing. And we carried on walking our separate ways. And this thing was still visible to me as I was walking home, still hadn't traveled with the wind, and had now took on the classic V shape of a bird, but I'm big. I mean, I'm estimating this thing is about the size of a bus in the sky. And I finally lost sight of it when it seemed to drift upwards into low clouds. So at no point did it increase its speed or rush off anywhere, or it just, as if it was literally up in the air, and then it gradually went into low clouds. And that was the end of my sighting. And I think, and I got home, I said to my husband, "You'll never believe this weird thing I've seen." And then after I'd processed it the next day, I did draw some sketches of where I'd seen it, what it looked like. And I'll tell you all the things it wasn't. It wasn't a black bag floating in the sky. It wasn't a bird. It wasn't a drone. It wasn't a Chinese lantern. It was none of those things. It was an unidentified flying object in the shape of a bird, which the only reason it changed its shape was because of the angle I was looking at. And when it was above the building, I estimated it about the size of a bus in the sky, not a big bus, something like a minibus. And I tried afterwards, so there was nothing on media about it at all, nothing. And yet I'd had this experience of meeting other people who'd seen it, and they told me a whole pub full of people had watched it. That was it. And like I said, I actually deleted the time-stamped evidence that I have of this thing because I was really quite embarrassed about this. I thought, this is crazy. If nobody I know has heard of it or seen it. So that was my UFO sighting in 2018. What made me revisit it and get in touch with you was when the Americans released all their UFO stuff from their Navy sightings. And there was one they said was rotated, and it actually looked like the shape of this thing I saw. So a rigid winged bird shape. And logically, if you believe in UFOs being craft of some kind, or robots of some kind that are orbiting us, or, you know, mapping us or something, then logically a bird shape is the one you might choose because it would be the least noticeable. And certainly none of the people around me were even bothering to look up at the sky. And to me, this thing was just so bizarre. I had to look up at it. It had really caught my attention. So that was what happened to me in 2018, Nick.
That's wonderful, Stella.
It made me quite nervy talking about that, actually. Revisiting again, you know? Really, really strange experience, you know?
And so most of my guests relive. As soon as they start speaking it, be like, "I haven't thought about this in years."
Oh, good. I think I just wanted to say how long the sighting seemed to take. From when I first saw it to when I was walking home and saw it going into the clouds was a good three quarters of an hour. It was a long sighting. And what was most bizarre about it was that it wasn't just me, that I met this elderly couple and we stood and talked about it, and that they told me a load of other people were watching it. And yet there was nothing in the news or anything the next day or any time. I've tried Googling it, you know. I've tried looking all over the internet for UFOs of similar shape and size. Nothing, absolutely nothing. There are hardly any accounts of bird-like UFOs, except when you had Mike Clunand on, the Owl Man, and he sees a relationship between owls and UFOs. But I'm not sure whether he's ever seen a UFO in the shape of an owl, you know. But he certainly thinks birds and UFOs have got a connection. And it seemed very personal to me. I mean, not at any point did any other passers-by stop and say, "What on earth are you looking at?" Not even when I was standing with these two people on the street talking about it and looking at it and pointing at it. And that was very weird. And again, it was almost like being in a hypnotic state, almost as if we were invisible. Everything else, the cars and everything else, everybody, cyclists, people were going by without taking any notice. I have talked to this to another podcaster, but without actually being on her podcast. And she specializes in fairies and folklore. And she immediately said to me, "Oh, were this old couple, was there anything weird about them? Did they seem completely human?" And I kind of felt she was trying to shoehorn that into her own field of research, because no, to me, they were just normal people who said, "Oh, we've just come from the Cambridge pub." I thought there was nothing out of the ordinary about them at all. They were just as amazed at this thing as I was, you know, and we were trying to think of what it could possibly be. What I think it did is that it opened me up to starting to have experiences again. And it almost coincided with a big change in my life, radical change in my life, because very soon after that, I used hypnosis to give up my alcoholism. I'd been an alcoholic all my adult life, it actually started in my school day years, where I would spend my school dinner money on beer, if you can believe it. So, and that wasn't, it wasn't actually discouraged by my family, because they brewed booze at home, made wine at home. This was not an uncommon thing to do back in the 60s and 70s. People did this to save money. But yeah, so I was suffered from alcoholism, yeah, all my adult life. And I gave it up using hypnotism probably about a month after having this sighting. And I know this other researcher I was just mentioning, yeah, her name's Jo Hickey Hall, and she runs the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast. She always asks her guests if there was anything life-changing that was going on at the time they had their sightings. And I think that's a very interesting aspect. Sometimes people will say no, nothing at all, and other people say yeah, major things, you know. And in my case, I think this sighting kind of opened me up to using hypnosis. I think I had used it briefly for anxiety when I was in a job where we were under loads of pressure and everybody was afraid of being sacked all the time. I had briefly gone to a hypnotist and used a CD, which helped reduce anxiety at work, but that was all I'd used it for in the past. But after this experience, I was much more open to it and started using hypnosis much more regularly for simple things like helping me to go to sleep better, helping me relax.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
And I also, in the last 2 or 3 years, I have had other experiences which are all part of this phenomenon, this worldwide phenomenon. I don't know whether you think these things are all connected, but clearly some of your guests have said so, and other researchers kind of think so, that things like UFOs, cryptids, fairies and ghosts, perhaps they're all kind of on a continuum and they're all part of the same phenomena in some way that has grown up alongside human beings. So you could take a completely materialistic aspect and say they actually exist, and they exist on this earth as a kind of ecology that has grown up alongside us, and sometimes we see them and sometimes we're unaware of them. You could say that, or you could say that it's part of our what the human brain creates, and we can all share it somehow. So some of the other things that I've experienced in recent years have been, I've had a big cat sighting, British big cat sighting, which I managed to take a photo of, which was just a little blob in the distance, so it didn't prove anything one way or the other. Very interesting. And I'm not sure whether they qualify as a cryptid anymore, because there's more and more physical evidence that they might actually exist. So, but I had one of those. I've had that thing about hearing explosive noises in the distance when you're half awake in the small hours of the morning. I've had that. If you Google that, it's supposed to affect middle-aged women more than anybody else. I don't know whether your viewers would agree with that. And you had a recent guest on who was called a rescue medium, who talked about astral spiders. Now, astral spiders, I mean, that was one of your scariest episodes, actually. Anybody who's got arachnophobia, which I've had all my life, the idea that you might see these monstrous things in a state of being half awake, yeah, I've had that. I went through a period of that probably in my 40s, where it, just before I woke up, I just took this was a sort of horrible nightmarish thing that woke me up, simply because I have normal arachnophobia. But after listening to her on your podcast, I'm not so sure, you know, because it only happened for a few months and then it was gone. And here's another weird thing: after having those experiences, my fear of real spiders has been much reduced. You know, I used to be, I literally couldn't be in the same room. I'd have to leave the room and get somebody else to deal with it. But now I'm not too bad. I'm afraid I can't trap them in a jar or anything. So I wonder if having these experiences in some way neutralizes, either opens you up to another ability or neutralizes fears or habits, maybe. I'm not sure what you would think about that. My other opinion about it, which I formed because I'm an artist and I do a lot of fantasy art, and I've always been fascinated on as to how we can project, if you like, the things we have in our brains to somebody else through the medium of writing or artwork. And I mentioned The Lord of the Rings earlier on, and I think that's very important because a lot of people who grew up in the 60s and 70s grew up with that book. It was, for a long time, it was Britain's number one favourite book. And Waterstones used to do an annual poll, and it always came out on top. And a lot of the academia really looked down their nose at this. They thought this was the plebs, you know, choosing their favourite book. And but, yeah, it was massively influential and popular. And long before any of the movies were made, you could talk to somebody about The Lord of the Rings and they had exactly the same pictures in their mind reading it that you had. And it was almost as if he was just, his ability to project into your head what he was seeing as he wrote about it. I've always been fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by a phenomena called simulacrum, which is where we see faces and things connected to human beings in the natural world. So in like clouds, trees, stones. And it's so easy to do this. If you go out on a walk anywhere, just around your neighborhood, and say, I'm going to look for simulacrum, you will see some. There's no question. You will see some. You will see two or three of them on an average walk around a neighborhood or looking at various trees. I can guarantee it. You know, it's so easy. And I wonder if that was one of the reasons our ancestors, you know, grew up with this idea that there were spirits in all natural things, because you can see human faces in so many things. I've even done a little video about this on my YouTube channel. So that's it really, Nick. It seems to have opened me up to having other experiences. I've recently had a past life regression, first time ever, and that's a very different form of hypnosis to just relaxing hypnosis. Again, it kind of reinforces my idea that a lot of this is the human mind creating things, and I don't think we're anywhere near imitating the human mind. What people are calling artificial intelligence today is literally just increasing computer speed, computer power. That's all it is. It's not, we're never going to get near imitating the human brain in all its complexity, and I don't think we're ever going to understand. And the more and more people that are on the earth, we're up to, what, getting on for 9 billion now. In fact, the brain power of all these people, you could say, yeah, nowadays the internet's got a lot to do with it because we're all interconnected. But long before the internet, people were seeing the same kind of things. They had the same kind of beliefs all over the world. So this is more like the human brain. And that, by saying that, I don't want to offend anybody because I don't want anybody to think I'm belittling it. I'm certainly not belittling my own experiences or other people's. This is just as real as your normal waking life. I'm sure it's just as real. I'm very, very open-minded as to what could cause it all. But I do lean towards it being part of, like, a byproduct, if you like, of human consciousness. So I hope I haven't offended anybody with that, Nick.
Don't be silly, Stella. Like I said, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And this is what it's all about, trying to learn. We have to look at everything. We can't just put all this in just one box. We have to understand that the brain is extremely complicated. There's so much we do not understand about it. And there is definitely a connection, you know, 100% with consciousness and all that. These are not just physical things we're seeing. Until we have 100% answers, you know, we're obviously always going to speculate and stuff, but that is how we learn and grow.
Explore every possibility, because what I've noticed with your guests and guests on other podcasts about strange things is that everybody's experience is completely unique to them. It almost as if it's tailored to them and their personality almost, you know.
You're right, and there are so many connections. Obviously, on this show, I don't have a particular agenda, so I never say, you know, exactly what you saw was aliens. Don't do that on the show, because like you said, everyone's account is personal to them, and everything is connected. And I'm not 100% sure, but it is all connected. And I have a lot of my guests that, exactly like you, you know, you were dealing with something at the time when you had your experiences. Is there a connection? There very well could be a connection. You know, because I've had people going through different things, childhood trauma, and then there's these experiences.
Well, I think what you're doing is really important, because you're collecting all these experiences and you're keeping a kind of record of them. And it's just ordinary people telling you. It's not people who've studied it in the past, particularly, you know, people who've been born in different times. Like, I grew up in the 60s, which was the flower power era, and then the 70s, which was all really things about aliens and UFOs really exploded in the 70s. There was, you know, especially in the West Country, down here in England, there was lots of UFO sightings. So maybe the era we grew up in as well, which opens us up to this. You know, the experiences I've had over the last two or three years, which since my UFO sighting, they're not down to, I can assure your listeners, they're not down to psychiatric illness, they're not down to alcohol. It's almost as if having that sighting allowed me to have other experiences.
Your early childhood ones, I mean, obviously back in those days, a lot of people were sent to these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really know. So they always labelled, they always stuck a label on you because they figured that's the answer. But a lot of people have these visions. I probably wouldn't say hallucinations, because to me it sounds very complex, the ones that you were having. You know, you were seeing people from a distance.
Differences in my eyesight perception, yeah, as well as these strange things I saw at night in the night sky, yeah. Yeah, they were different. And the falling dreams, I know you've had people on, and so I've heard on other podcasts, that has been linked with some people to UFO abduction stories, feeling that you're falling as soon as you shut your eyes in bed, as if you're falling through the universe, you know. That was how it seemed to me, you know, and it was pretty frightening, actually.
That's right. And they've always, you know, people have always said that, you know, when you wake up and your leg jolts, you know, some people say that you're in a dream state and you're having an out-of-body experience, you know, you're astral projecting, and that's just you jumping back into your body. Possibly, you know, like your experiences when you're younger, could be, you know, you're at the age, early teenage years, it could be that you were tapping into something that we have, or things that we were able to do in our past. You know, maybe you were just tapping into psychic abilities.
Well, certainly seeing myself from outside as I was cycling, and also when I was in bed, that's pretty common, I believe. You know, a lot of people have that. And again, that's a sort of altered perception, isn't it? There is, you know, the phenomenon of people being able to throw their voice, which people used to do as a stage show with dummies. Why can't we throw our eyesight as well, you know? And so maybe that's connected to astral travelling.
And yeah, I've had guests on the past that have been walking beside themselves, or they've seen themselves from a distance as they're actually awake. You know, they're going somewhere.
Yeah, I was awake when I was cycling to school and I had these experiences. Yeah, so I didn't really talk to anybody about all this when I was a child. I thought everybody has these, you know.
And it did stop for a while.
It stopped because all the business of adult life, working, and I was also an alcoholic, and I had lots of trauma in my adult life as well. That all drives it out, I think. That all drives it out. You're no longer, you haven't no longer got the time that you had when you were a child. And then you've only got the time again later on in life when perhaps you cut down your working hours. I had early retirement 3 years ago now, which obviously has allowed me to do things like get out into the countryside more and revisit some of these interests I had in the past. So, you know, I'm obviously a lot more open to it. I think that happens to a lot of people. You know, the ordinary business of daily life just drives a lot of this out of our minds.
Yeah, I think when we turn into adults, we lose a lot of things when we're a child. You know, it's whether it's being subdued or numbed, or daily grind, and there's the stress of having to make money and provide for your families. Whereas children, you know, they're free. You know, everything is good, everything is exciting. But adulthood.
Well, I think I was very lucky in the era I grew up in, because, like I said, my mum was very open to allowing me to. She was fascinated by all science fiction-y stuff herself, and things like fairies and ghosts. And she was quite open, happy to talk. She used to share the books she was reading. We used to share books, but like mostly science fiction and stuff together. So that, you know, that was very open-minded. She loved The Lord of the Rings as well. I feel I was lucky to have grown up in that era before the internet, where we had to use our imaginations a lot more.
I am the same. They are days gone. And of course, Lord of the Rings is a wonderful book. I also read that when I was a kid.
Yeah, he was tapping into genuine British, you know, the Celtic era, the Anglo-Saxon era. He was actually tapping into genuine historical history and incorporating it, you know. in his kind of imaginary world that he created. So it was familiar. It was very familiar to us. People have said it's the best known novel about England because it was all set in the English countryside almost, you know.
And his imagination was amazing. I mean, he wrote this in the trenches, didn't he? In the trenches of World War One, he'd be writing these, and he would come up with languages and characters. Absolutely amazing. I don't think there was any other author like it.
No, and still isn't, you know. I mean, as a point of principle, I've never watched the films, you know. There used to be a thing on Radio 4 called I've never seen Star Wars. Well, in my case, it's I've never seen the Lord of the Rings films because I'm a purist. You know, I didn't like the way they cut large chunks out of the books, and it would spoil everything about my own vision of the books, you know.
I agree, because once you watch it as a movie, and it happens with a lot of books, they're obviously projecting their imagery and what they perceive and their characters and actors.
Right. I don't need that. I just want Tolkien's vision, thanks very much. You know, I don't want anybody else's vision of it, you know.
There's nothing like reading a book and you've created that vision, all the characters.
Created it, but the writer has somehow projected that out into the world, which you're picking up. You're creating it with the writer. And I feel the same as an artist. I illustrate people's books where they self-publish on the internet. I illustrate books, and there tends to be a strong fantasy science fiction emphasis. And so you're in a creative relationship with the person, the actual author, and it's not just a contract. It's not just, oh, I'm hiring you to illustrate my books. It's not like that. You're working alongside them to produce images.
Question about that. Now, when someone comes to you to illustrate a book, would you read the book first?
No, I ask them to pick out paragraphs that they want illustrated. And I ask them to be as specific as possible, you know. I am trying to get into their head. I am trying to do exactly what they see. So, yeah, I don't read the whole book, no. I ask them for a sentence or their idea of what the scene should look like. It is a collaboration. It's not just, oh, I'm contracted to do something. And it's always been like that. Yeah, that's what I do when I'm not just enjoying my semi-retirement.
And I suppose it also, if the writer is a good writer, you know, proper writer, then it would probably be a lot easier because, you know, they are projecting this imagery into your imagination.
I do actually believe there is something kind of telepathic going on. That's why I've said to you, I think this whole creative impulse, and that's what I think the is connected to phenomena as well. And I include everything in that: ghosts, UFOs, fairies, cryptids. There's something our brains are connected in some way, Nick.
Yeah, it's like the World Wide Web, isn't it? The way everyone, like our computers, are connected now, and I think it is the same with the brains.
And they are a pale imitation of what the human brain is actually doing, a pale imitation. And I'm not saying that just purely as an ordinary average person thinking about this. I am in contact with a lady in this country who's a professor of AI and robotics at a British university, and she tells me the same thing, that nothing you see, you know, robots leaping around a gymnasium, this sort of thing, she said, nothing you see is genuine. You know, they would have took weeks and weeks and weeks to take that few seconds of film because the things kept falling over or something, you know. And she goes to conferences on AI and robotics, international conferences. I believe she's telling the truth, you know. And she says they are nowhere near what they tell you. And most of what you hear about AI and robotics is because these companies are bidding for funds, bidding for grant money for their research.
That is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying it out of the blue. I'm saying it because I have personal contact with somebody who's in that field, quite high up in that field as well.
It's a scary thing. I mean, even the AI images these days, some of them are so good. You know, people think they're actually seeing a real image, a real photograph, but they're not.
Well, I'll be honest, most of the stuff I see on social media that are supposed to be these deep fakes, I feel I can easily see that it's not real. But I am looking at it with an artist's eye, I suppose, but I can easily pick them out.
Yeah, I'd imagine you can. But of course, to the untrained eye and people which are just flicking down their phone saying, oh, that's real. Oh, that's real.
Yeah, there's a tremendous lack of seeing everything on screens and only knowing works of literature from movies it's dumbed everybody down, definitely. It's dumbed down our imagination. It's dumbed down our ability, you know, to look at artwork and see it properly.
It also makes you wonder if any of that is deliberate, if we're intentionally dumbed down.
Oh, yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, you know, happy slaves, isn't it, you know?
Exactly. It's like the old Colosseum, isn't it, in Rome, where they used to keep people entertained with games and...
Yeah, well, exactly. The internet is our modern version of bread and circuses.
So, you know, definitely people do need to, I say this quite often, you know, people need to leave the internet and TV and everything that's being pumped into you and just go out to nature and express yourself, you know, whether it's through art or just hiking, you know, things simple as that. But people definitely need to switch off sometimes and connect with the things that are outside. Look up, look at what's around you. Because I feel we have definitely lost that. And we just seem to be, I know people which are just plugged into the internet constantly.
It's a very limited way of living, isn't it? Very limited. You know, they'd be just as happy in a jail cell, wouldn't they?
Yeah. There is, you know, there is a connection between, when you know, when someone has a sighting and them personally. You know, I don't believe that every sighting some, you know, people have are just flybys, you know, just they just observe something. I think there is definitely a connection, and there's definitely a reason why they're sitting at that time. There's a reason why the people all around you didn't look up and didn't witness and just simply weren't interested. Because if I see someone looking up, I want to know what they're looking at.
I would as well. That's what really surprised me. It was almost like I said all the way through, kind of like being in a mild hypnotic state, because nobody around me was taking any notice.
In the past, we've called this alien apathy. It's like you're having this experience, but the next person, the person around you, are just not interested. It's like, I wouldn't necessarily say it's only for you, because I simply don't know. But, you know, there were others that saw it.
Yes, I met others as I'd walked away from where it was overhead, because that was my thought. I'll walk to the other side of that building because it's on my way home anyway, and maybe I'll see it from another angle, get more of an idea what it is, you know. And at that point, I met two people who also saw it, and we stood and had a mad conversation about it. We didn't have a clue what it could possibly be.
All those eyes couldn't work out what it was. And the time that you saw it, which was a while, you know, it wasn't a short, quick, brief sighting. You saw it for a while. So, you know, we can definitely discount drones because they have limited batteries in any case.
Well, also, I'm sure there's rules about hovering over, like, heavily built up areas with drones anyway. I'm sure that you wouldn't be allowed to do it. And that's one of the reasons I talked to this old couple. We were saying things like, oh, could it be the university doing something? Well, believe me, Nick, if Bristol University had been doing something like that, it would be all over the news, because they'd be so proud of their achievement, whatever it was they were doing, you know, or they'd want to warn the public, if you see this strange thing in the sky, don't worry, it's our research department doing something, or, you know, it wouldn't not be in the media.
And especially if it was the size of a minibus.
For me, it was about that size up in the sky, yeah. Yes, so I have not had any other UFO experiences since then. I do feel that I might have had a glimpse of this thing a few years before, in about 2013. And again, it was, but only briefly, and it was an instant of when I was under a lot of stress, because I'd started jogging, actually, for my health. I'd started jogging, which was very difficult for me because I got arthritis. I'm disabled in other ways. And this particular day was, again, it was in the middle of the day. It was a Saturday. I'd managed to jog about 4 miles, which was a huge distance for me. Big achievement. And I'd literally lied down on this bench to recover. I looked straight up at the sky. This was down by Bristol Docks. And saw a brown thing like a giant bird just travelling, again, fairly slowly between the clouds and then disappearing. And I'm seriously wondering if it was the same thing. And that brief memory came back to me when I was thinking about this for this podcast. I might have caught a glimpse of it before. What does that say to you? Does that say that here is a real UFO busy orbiting the Earth? Or does it say this is something peculiar to me? But it wasn't just me that saw it this time. But yeah, I do have a slight feeling that I'd seen something before. And I'm not the sort of person who would mistake this for birds, because I'm quite a bird watcher, you know. I'm very good at identifying British birds, especially our big ones, our hawks and buzzards and things. There's a lot of them I see when I'm out on my country walks, and I could not mistake them for this thing. If I had got as far as filling out the police form, because they send you a form to put the details down of whatever it was you saw, I didn't. I decided, no, I just can't go through with this. But I would have left out the detail about the little dangly blinking lights hanging down off it. That, to me, was just too bizarre.
And I have a feeling that a lot of people do this. You know, a lot of people do not come forward with this strange stuff. Because I'd have a guest on and they say, you know, this also happened to me, but would you not put it in because it doesn't make sense? And, I talk to her, say, you know, I understand it doesn't make sense to you. And it probably won't make sense to a lot of people. But you saw this. You saw this and it is important. So I think a lot of people, they were happy to a degree, you know, that people are happy to report classic sightings and things that can be accepted, but leave out the things which they don't believe will be accepted. And I do think that it's equally as important because it's, again, it's another little piece of the puzzle. And then if multiple people around the world are having these experiences with this one particular thing, it's something else to add to the table.
Well, like when I said I have had a big cat sighting, it's exactly what I said to you before, Nick. I felt as if I was in a state of hypnosis while I was having it. Which can be easily explained in physiological terms, that if you saw a predator, you would freeze, right? We are prey animals. We would probably freeze, maybe put ourselves into a light hypnotic state to try and stay still. So that can be explained quite easily, because a lot of people mention that when they've seen these creatures, that they freeze, you know. And my sighting wasn't good enough for... I did send it off to a... Rick Minter, who does big cat conversations, he was very interested, but he obviously my photograph wasn't good enough as evidence. They're a bit out on a limb. They're a bit of an outlier, actually, because there's a lot of evidence that they could be real. If you listen to his next podcast, he's going to talk in detail about the most recent DNA evidence, which is pretty conclusive. So seeing British big cats is not in the same realm perhaps as seeing Bigfoot, you know, because British big cats could be real.
There's been talk for many years that a lot of people would have these as pets and they would get too much from them and release them. I mean, we've had even in the Cotswolds sightings of big cats. So yeah, there is possible. But an interesting thing is actually when you said that you froze, I think there's a belief when some kind of predatory animals, they are able to give off a signal, an energy to do this, to stun their prey. It's something I've heard before when it comes to Bigfoot sightings, where people have had experiences with Bigfoots. Before they see something, they have this feeling.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the things Joe Hickey Hall asks her guests on the Fairy podcast is, did you make eye contact with it? Or did it make eye contact with you? She's always asked that question as if it's really important. So again, there's that hypnosis element to it, you know. And UFOs, we're sort of stood there staring at it in bemusement, aren't we? It's there's definitely something like that.
There's definitely something like that going on.
I'm not saying all UFOs are predatory, but that we react to them in that way.
It's the connection something is making with us. In a past guest I had before, she was in her house. In fact, she was another artist. She was in her house and she had a massive urge to go outside and look up. And sure enough, she went outside, looked up and saw this object. So, you know, when people are having these experiences, there is a connection made from point A to point B.
Yeah, very personal. It's very personal, isn't it? Where are we now? 8-9 billion people. Is that 8 to 9 billion different experiences that we could all have, you know?
Also the thing with all these people, you know, when they do mass meditation sessions across the world, things do happen. Yeah. And it's the same with people have to stay in balance and they have to be happy and project this energy and positivity and all that. And if the whole world connects, the 9 billion, 8 billion, 9 billion old people did this, the world would be a very different place. You know, this energy is positivity.
Well, this is where it's so important for people like you are chronicling all this, because this could all be evidence of how we can interconnect with one another.
And I think that will be our future. We have had many, many dark days. You know, there is light at that tunnel. It is possible. People need to connect. People need to stop being divided. So people need to, you know, look at what we are and what we are to this planet and to each other in a very different way. Going to be all connected to our, you know, our personal development.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that some of these visions that people have, whether it's UFOs or whatever it is, could be part of their own healing in some way as well. That it's like in my case, I do feel that it's opened me up to having more experiences, and it's opened me up to more self-exploration, you know.
I do. I 100%. Well done for getting over the alcoholism. You know, it is very hard. That is a massive hurdle which you've done. And I've got you on video now and you're looking the picture of health. So congratulations.
I can assure you that being labelled as having a personality disorder at the age of 16, we're talking about pretty primitive days in the mid-70s, still pretty primitive. They were still using ECT in hospitals. I think today that that wouldn't have happened. I think they would have maybe gone down the road of giving me some sort of counselling rather than giving me a psychiatric label.
It just goes to show, doesn't it? You know, you learn over time. You know, I've got friends and I've had guests on here which have dealt with whether it's alcohol or even drugs, you know, so not never an easy thing to quit something which is so ingrained with you. So, you know, well done. And anyone out there which is struggling with their own demons, you know, in whichever form it is, don't give up.
Well, I would highly recommend hypnosis to help with it. And I have, I'll tell you a podcast I also recommend to people is Terrain Theory, which is two guys from the States. And that's all about natural health and healthy living and stuff. And I was on there and I was highly, we were talking about hypnosis on there as a way of healing. You've got to qualify this and say it might not work for everybody. And some people will be very resistant to it, but I found it hugely helpful.
Yeah, you've just got to try things and what can work for you. Not everything is going to work for everyone. You know, everyone, you know, people are different, but definitely. But yeah, if you give us a link to that, and I'll happily add that to the webpage that will, you know, accompany this episode. And that was Terrain Theory. And the other podcast is Modern Fairies Podcast.
Modern Fairy Sightings Podcast.
Right, okay. I'll put a link to that as well, and I'll certainly check that out. I'm always interested, and our listeners are, of new podcasts.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Stella, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you.
Take care and bye for now. That is all for today. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Paul and Stella for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.